Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690. Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Montreal's messiest sandwich, Dagwood's Chili Dag, with pepperoni, cheese, peppers, onions. Dagwood's famous chili and sauce comes with a bib.
There's that 200-foot phrase that so many of the guys in the studio at Scarborough today love. How you doing, Pierre?
Good, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for jumping on with us. And
My pleasure.
I know it is a busy day. Let's start there with Philippe Deneau. It's our first opportunity to talk about the trade that was made over the weekend prior to deadline day. Weiss and Fleischman for Deneau in a second in 2018.
Well, I contacted you on Friday night. I thought it was a real good move by the Montreal Canadiens. I'm a big Philippe Deneau fan. He had found a real comfortable home as a third center in Chicago. I think that would have changed a little bit once Marcus Kruger came back, and he would have been probably bumped down to the four hole. But the four hole in Chicago, you're playing behind Kruger, Anisimov, and Taves. It's not a slight. It's actually a positive reflection based on the depth they have in their organization, of a player that really understands the sport. He's got very good hockey sense. He can skate. I've done a bunch of Chicago games this year where he played, and he played very well. He'll be a good penalty killer. I think he'll provide energy. But what it does is now it gives you the ability to set up a structure where you know he's the three guy. You don't know who your two guy is. You think you might have a one in Galchenyuk. And you got a bunch of guys who can probably fill the four hole, whether it's Torrey Mitchell or Michael McCarron or whomever. So I think that's a positive for you to build off of. They had to address the center ice position. I think Mark did that very well last week on Friday.
All right. He was asked about Galchenyuk specifically playing wing, and we'll obviously follow up when we get a chance to talk to him ourselves. And he said it doesn't necessarily mean that he's done at center, but he's been playing well. Now, I thought if the Canadiens took the ice tonight in San Jose with Alex Galchenyuk as a left winger, that it would be a mistake by the organization. If they're trying to develop him as a centerman, that would indicate to me that they don't think he's a centerman. Why would you give up another 20 games of possible development for a position you need by keeping him on the wing?
It's a great question. I can't wait to hear the answer that he provides. I'm really looking forward to that. You probably watched good portions of our show today.
I sure did.
And in the morning, that's what we talked about. It's crazy. He was drafted as a center iceman, not a winger. You don't get a lot of chance for live fire exercise. You know, everybody in Toronto today, you know what they're talking about? William Nylander and Kasperi Kapanen and all the young guys from the Toronto Marlies who are going to play for the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. They're all excited about their young guys getting a chance. And Lou Lamoriello just addressed it. He says, we've got 20 games left in our season in the American League and 20 games left in the NHL. They're not all going to play 20 games up here, but they're going to get some real taste for the NHL and learn how to handle the NHL. That's exactly what the Canadiens should be doing with Alex Galchenyuk.
Okay, so we wait for Bergevin. In the meantime, how about Devontae Smith-Pelly for Stéphane Matteau? What didn't happen for Matteau in New Jersey?
He has to figure out what kind of player he wants to be. I think Steph thinks he's one kind of a player, meaning a fancy guy with the puck and a more of an offensive force. But he's yet to show that. He's yet to prove that he can do that at any level, by the way. Whether it was with the U.S. development team, whether it was in major junior hockey playing for Joel Bouchard, or whether it was obviously in the Albany or in the NHL, he's yet to prove that he could be a dominant offensive player. He can be a good player, though. Doesn't mean you got to get points to be a good player. There are a lot of guys in the league that are Andrew Desjardins in Chicago, Andrew Shaw in Chicago. I just use those guys as examples. I did a game last night between Los Angeles and Anaheim, and Andrew Cogliano is a good example. You don't have to get points to be an effective good player. Jakob Silverberg. So he can be a good player. Now, I think the one thing that he'll have to do if he wants to become a good Montreal Canadian, Mitch, he's got to be aggressive. He needs to establish physical contact. He needs to be a straight line player. New Jersey didn't see that from him. They wanted him to be that. That didn't materialize, so they moved him along, and they're taking an opportunity with Devontae Smith-Pelly.
So who's had the same issues?
Well, the one thing I can tell you, Devontae Smith-Pelly has a better offensive track record than what you've seen from Steph on the toe. Go back to when Devontae Smith, and I know, you know, it's easy for me to say this, but he played on a line with Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry, and he was outstanding in Anaheim. He's outstanding. But he needs to now, Devontae Smith-Pelly, that is, he needs to prove that he wants to be a physical player, a power forward, and a guy that can play with skill.
With Pierre Maguire off the set in Scarborough at TSN on trade deadline day. Melnick in the afternoon on game night. We'll hear from Mark Bergevin a few minutes live, along with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo. Rod?
So, Pierre, you saw the Bergevin-Deneau-Chicago connection as a positive, but just to look at it from the other side, let's say you've got a built-in bias where you come from a certain organization and you like players that you participated in the draft and development of that organization. How do you get past that bias and prevent yourself from falling in love with a certain way of doing things?
I don't know if you can. That's one of the reasons why he's got the job in Montreal. One of the reasons why he's got it, because he was part of the Chicago Blackhawks organization, which has won 3 Stanley Cups in 6 years and potentially could win 4 and 7 and back-to-back last year and this year. That's how good they are. He was part of that in the early infancy of their development. So I don't know how you can get away from that. A lot of my ideology comes from what I learned from Scotty Bowman. I don't know if I can ever get away from that, because it's worked. And where did he get his ideology? Learning from the very best people in Frank Selke, and Sam Pollock, and Toll Blake. So when you're taught that and you're raised that way, it's hard to get away from it because it's proven to have been successful. So I don't know how you get away from that bias.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, but plucking a guy out of Chicago.
No, and I'm not suggesting at all it's a bad thing, but I am saying potentially at one point you've got to build your own identity and get away
from
it.
Well, that's where you come into the top 6 forwards that he was and will be again asked about, and he said the best way to address that is through the draft, which is fine, but the guy they drafted to be there is not playing where they drafted him. But let me ask you about a couple of moves that weren't made, Pierre. We just played a sample of callers to Vancouver Radio who are incensed.
Oh, it's bad there. It's really bad.
I mean, how do you hold on to Radim Verbata, for example?
Well, I don't think they tried to hold on to him. Radim Verbata's had a terrible year.
Yeah, but he's
and so I don't know how many people wanted to trade for him.
Not even a sixth.
Now, go ahead.
Not even a sixth or something.
Well, maybe. I mean, that part I don't know, because obviously my general manager, Cora Friends, they weren't asking me about Radim Verbata. They were asking me about other players. His name never came up, and the Cora Friends that asked me or solicit my opinion, his name never came up. So I can't speak to, you know, what happened with Vancouver and Radim Verbata. What I mentioned today on the panel, and Ray lives in Vancouver, but what I said is, you may not be able to trade Radim Verbata, but you may for sure be able to trade Dan Hamhuis and Radim Verbata together as a package. And how prepared are you just to punt so that you move them along, but you get a better package coming back the other way? Because there was a lucrative market, I believe, on Dan Hamhuis, whether it was Chicago or whether it was Dallas. I think you could have struck gold somewhere, and you put Verbata in the deal. That's how you do that, if in fact you're trying to build your brand that way.
All right, I want to get back to the Canadians here, and then we'll finish up in a couple of minutes with Pierre Maguire, as we're all trying to follow along in what has been probably the slowest trade deadline day any of us can remember since it went big time. There was a report that Lars Eller's agent said that he's been told he will not be traded, and then within an hour, there was a report out of Edmonton that Nail Yakupov has been informed that he will not be traded. Do you think it's possible there's any connection there and it might be revisited in the summer?
Don't know the answer to that. I can tell you this. I know for a fact that Nail Yakupov's name was all over because I was asked about him by more than one team. So I can't speak to Lars Eller. It's a lot like Verbata. Nobody ever raised Lars Eller's name to me in my circle of friends. I never had anybody say, what do you think of Lars Eller? I've had them ask me questions on a ton of other players, but not about Lars and not about Nail Yakupov.
All right, in a move that was highly anticipated but was made before today, Eric Staal to the Rangers. Do you see him playing on the wing in New York, down the middle, both? And how much do you think he can help them?
I think it's an experiment. They're trying to try to feel it out tonight. It's going to be interesting because the biggest thing with him is he's had a terrible year. He's a lot like Radim Verbata. He's had a terrible year. And he's got to be better if he's going to help the Rangers. The Rangers obviously need substantial more offense, especially because of the injury to Rick Nash. I think we talked about that's where I thought Eric Staal would end up. He did end up there. I just hope for him that he can have some success because he was going, you go back from 06 to 2010, he was as dynamic a forward as there was in the league. He really was. Just again, you know, you get older and you get broken down and the guys that surround you aren't as good anymore. And then you're not perceived to be as good a player. And I hope that's not how he goes out because he was a very good player for a long time.
Well, he's only 31. I know there's such a thing as being an old 31, but it's not like he's 34, 35.
No, but he started at 18.
Right.
I mean, it's not like he started when he was 22 or 23. So that's part of the issue there too. And the team hadn't been very good. I mean, it hadn't been very good. So he's been a targeted guy quite often in the course of his career.
So, Pierre, Stamkos is a pending unrestricted free agent, and the Lightning are a very good team that are going to be right up there with the Rangers and Capitals come playoff time. Are you surprised that Steve Yzerman didn't use his chip in Jonathan Drouin to try to acquire something that can help him now?
Oh, he did. He definitely did. He tried to, and the offers weren't as good as he wanted them to be. So part of that, I really truly believe it, and I don't know if it'll ever come out, but part of that, I believe, is because of the injury situation. I know we talked about it about 10 days ago, but I firmly believe the injury situation in St. Louis affected the ability to trade Jonathan Drouin. I think they would have made probably the most substantial deal. I'm absolutely shocked that Minnesota didn't do more. I consider them to be one of the losers of today because of the fact that they had a clear identity in terms of what they needed to establish today, and that was to add offense or to add really good defense, and they weren't able to do either. And it's a little bit shocking to me, but I thought the two likely places for him, when it was all said and done, was either going to be St. Louis or Minnesota, and they didn't ante up enough.
Steve Yzerman said publicly that he would welcome Jonathan Drouin back. Do you think that's just lip service, or do you think he's serious about that?
No, I don't think he's handled this brilliantly. He's handled it really. It shows you the kind of class that the ownership has there, and it shows you the kind of standards they have as an organization. He's handled it really well. Not an easy situation to deal with. If he said he'd take him back, I'm sure he would. But that being said, I think he's probably going to trade him.
Finishing up with Pierre McGuire, and if you can get, I mean, one of the things that happened today was because of the long periods of discussion, and you know the way that James Duthie is. I mean, that is Jennifer Hedger okay? I got to ask.
Jennifer just gave me a high five and just walked right by me. Can you hear her voice in the background? I'm sitting in a hallway here by the studio, and she just walked by and fist pumped me and said, see you, Pierre. She's doing great. Jennifer's doing outstanding.
Because the last time she was on the show, she actually sang to me before Christmas a couple years ago.
What did she sing? Merry Christmas?
No, she said it was Merry Christmas, baby. What did she sing to us? Oh, do you remember?
Merry
Christmas, baby, I think. Anyway.
She's such a good kid. She's a great person. I've known Jen a long time. I think I worked with her on one of her first shows. So, no, she's really a good person. Fun to see her today.
All right, the Bruins, they were hoping, obviously, that Dan Hamhuis would say yes instead of no. So they end up with John Michael Lyles and upfront Lee Stepniak from New Jersey. How do you think they made out here?
Two good moves. They didn't have to tamper with their roster. It changes the batting order a little bit up front. I think eventually you'll see Brett Connolly move down. You'll see Lee Stepniak go on the line with Bergeron and Marchand. John Michael Lyles, a Michigan State guy, a lot like Torrey Krug, same type of player. They needed mobility on the back end and some more puck movement. They've had a real difficult time moving the puck out of their own zone. I think when you get John Michael and you get Torrey Krug, that'll take a lot of pressure off of Chara. That'll take a lot of pressure off of Seidenberg. And they won't have to rely on Joe Morrow as much. So I think that's a positive thing for the Bruins. I like what the Bruins did today. I said before they made any moves, there were two teams that had to make moves, I thought. Minnesota was one, and they didn't. And the other one was Boston, and eventually they did. And I think Boston's put themselves in a good spot right now.
Pierre McGuire, thanks as always on Trade Deadline Day. And we will speak to Mark Bergeron within 10 minutes, either 5:35 or 5:40. Good. Thanks a lot.
Was he trying to mimic the Revenant with that beard? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I just saw that on television. Wow.
Yeah, I guess for those who aren't aware or haven't seen him, since that is a bit of a shock to see a guy like Bergeron with that kind of beard.
Have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow from Washington. I'm heading there right after I'm done this show here. This telethon we had at TSN today.
Thank you, Pierre.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.